Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, Atlanta Legal Experts listeners out there. Thank you for tuning in this morning. This is Emily Rowell, and I'm with Peachtree Offices. I have Rich Casanova here today.
Well, I feel honored every Tuesday to join you here on Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. And for listeners out there, is that what they call the Radio Land? Is that what they call it?
I guess so, yeah. And so, you're with Buckhead Business Radio X.
Yeah, yeah. So we do shows here, and we always enjoy our beautiful view here at the Peachtree Offices studio here in downtown Buckhead with our $1 million view. But they don't charge us $1 million. Don't tell anybody, whatever, yeah.
So, especially you, Rich.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So how was your turkey day?
It was great.
Right?
Ate too much, of course. How
nice.
About you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any leftovers still? Or did you bring any turkey omelets in for our guests or no?
They're gone.
They're like, thank you. Yeah, it is December now. Can you believe it's December?
I cannot believe it. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So,
2015.
Yeah, right around the corner. So for some of our listeners who may not have tuned in recently, we thought we'd kind of just do a little recap and up-to-date status on Atlanta Legal Experts. Congratulations, by the way. According to the wall, it says this is your 30th show. So
yay.
You look, AL Radio looks great for 30.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you. I'll take that.
You guys wear it well, yeah. And sound well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
excited.
So now you wear several hats here. First, let's talk about Peachtree Offices, which is kind of a new branding, right?
Yes, yes. We are formerly known as Crown Office Suites.
Is that with the E or without the E? Or,
with the E,
see,
yes.
Now you don't have to deal with that anymore,
exactly.
Right? It's Peachtree Offices, yeah, with the tree.
It's time for story time when I try to explain
story
everything.
Story time, yeah. So, just before we get into our program and the interviews here, so Peachtree Offices, so four locations inside the perimeter,
correct.
ITP.
Mm-hmm.
And physical offices, obviously, like here in our studio.
Yes.
And you opened a 10th floor here at the Buckhead location, right?
Yes, beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit jealous
brand
of that,
new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, beyond, obviously, the executive suite offices, what else do you all offer?
So we do virtual offices as well. So it starts with a mail service, meaning you have a professional business address at any of the locations all over Atlanta. If you just need somebody to answer your phones professionally live.
Thank God.
Yeah,
like I need that. Will they answer my cell phone too or return my calls?
Well, yeah, it'll,
for
we
anything
actually
for
are
a fee,
the
right?
gatekeeper.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
So, and then you can have a place to meet your clients and, a place to work. If you don't want a full-time office, you can have a place to just rent
or
an office.
Or a place to come on the air. And tell your story, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
no, we
help
just,
you build your business with that professional image.
Yeah, and speaking of business, what's one of your catchphrases for your majority of your clients are?
Attorneys.
Right, yeah. And what's it's almost like a bumper sticker. What's that phrase you have? Wait, we love attorneys?
There you go, sorry.
Yeah.
Right,
okay, so meanwhile.
We also have a sponsor.
Oh, yeah,
for
yeah,
the
yeah.
Show.
Sorry, sponsors,
it's,
yeah.
3A Law Practice Management, and they
that's
work
Alvaro,
with attorneys
right?
as well. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Alvaro Arouse.
Okay.
And he actually helps attorneys do what they do.
All right.
And so they, because they're really good at that.
Right, right.
And
yeah.
he kind of does the business end and helps them run their business from the background. So
more efficient, cost effective, and like all the services that they need. And ghostwriting, is that part of his services or what? No.
I'm not sure. We'll have to find out.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you can actually go to his website.
Okay.
You can actually find his website and the Peachtree Offices website on AtlantaLegalExperts.com.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well, again, we thank you all for being an underwriter here. And anybody looking to underwrite or sponsor a show, obviously check in at Atlanta Legal Experts or Business Radio X at Buckhead. So let's get underway with our show here. So tell
Absolutely.
Us who we have lined up as guests in the studio. We have a returning guest, right?
Yes, we do.
We'll talk
we
about
have
in a moment.
Kerry King with Jacobson King here to talk about his practice today. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we also have John Jupin with Firewall Investigations.
How you doing?
Thank you for being here. And Mike Mosky with On the Watch.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. We got some great experts
I'm telling
today.
You, yeah.
Yeah.
And Kerry was here for Veterans Day, right? You were
I
here
was.
For a Veterans Day show, yeah.
I was.
Nice. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Kerry, we'll start with your bio. I'll just read a little bit, and then the listeners can actually go to AtlantaLegalExperts.com and check out the entire bio. He is an Atlanta native who graduated from Georgia State University in 1963 with a Bachelor of Arts degree and received a law degree from John Marshall Law School in 1983. As an attorney, he currently practices as the senior attorney in the firm of Jacobson King, LLC, along with his son Scott, Greg Jacobs, and four other attorneys. He was a senior partner of Slater & King for 17 years and a partner with Schuster King
Schuster.
Schuster, sorry, King & King For 11 years prior to that, he was one of the lead defense counsel for Tanya Craft in the case of the State of Georgia versus Tanya Craft, a jury trial in Catoosa County, which lasted over 6 weeks and has garnered national media attention. He has appeared on Good Morning America, Inside Edition, and several local television and radio shows regarding various cases in which he was involved. He has also been involved in numerous high-profile civil litigation matters in state and federal courts. Impressive.
All true. I didn't make up one word of that, I don't think.
You lived it. Nice. So you focus on family law at Jacobson King. Tell me a little bit more about how you got to family law and just a little bit about that.
Sure. Actually, I had been divorced myself. And that,
I'm sorry to hear that.
And that was prior to my becoming an attorney. I went to law school when I was a little later in my life, in my mid-30s, based on the fact that I had a little detour over to the Army in Vietnam for a couple of years. So that sort of took me out of where my contemporaries were going, and that's why there was a 20-year gap between my college and my law school. Mm-hmm. When I got back from Vietnam, I knew that I was having issues with my marriage, and my ex-wife, who's a very nice person, mm-hmm. Couldn't put up with my craziness, I guess. And I had two children from that marriage, and it was a very painful process from all perspectives. And when I went to law school, I really felt like this was an area where I not only had personal experience and could understand the ups and downs of what divorce work is like, but something that I felt I would be good at. Mm-hmm. I've always prided myself, whether it's true or not, and whether I've inflated myself to believe this, I don't know. But I've always sort of prided myself on not just being somebody who knows the law dealing with family matters and divorce, but also somebody who can, for want of a better terminology, who knows how to relate and mm-hmm. to handhold, if you want to call it that, because I look for trying to reduce the stress in a divorce just because of what my own personal experience, and because of, at this point, I've probably had hundreds of divorces, and there are lots of ways to handle it. So that's how I got involved, and there are a lot of really fine family lawyers and divorce mm-hmm. lawyers out there. I certainly hope that I'm considered to be one of them.
Yes, yes. Now tell me a little bit about mediation and collaborative law.
I really am a great believer in the fact that 85-90% of divorces should be resolved through a process short of trial work. And I say that having had more than 30 years worth of trial work. So mm-hmm. I have tried my share of divorces, both what we call a bench trial, which would be just with the judge sitting and making the decisions. In Georgia, you have one of the few states where you can actually get a jury trial in a divorce. I'm not even sure. I think there may be one other one, maybe two.
Nobody's ever said it on the show, so I don't know.
But Georgia is a state where you can get there, mm-hmm. and you can get a divorce by going through a jury trial. I've certainly been through several with clients mm-hmm. where we couldn't resolve the issues, but it is the least desirable method. Mediation. Gosh,
he said, she said.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And particularly where there are children involved, if you go to a divorce case, even when you have a bench trial frequently, there's so much blood spilled on the floor as a result of that, or toothpaste out of the tube, or whatever your particular analogy is you'd like to use. There's a lot of pain and suffering that through the process, and once that information is put out there in the public, it's really hard to mend those wounds. Mediation, mm-hmm. you very much have a private venue. You very much, it's you and your client and the other attorney and his client. And if you've got the right lawyers, and we have some excellent divorce lawyers and family lawyers, not just mm-hmm. divorce,
right.
but divorce and related issues in this city, we have a lot of good, we have a really good state bar family law section. Most of the lawyers that practice family law will tell you that mediation is the way to go.
Gotcha.
And it prevents all that bad feeling that later on you have to deal with.
Possibly humiliation. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Speaking of the children, tell me more about child support and the rights of the fathers and the mothers. And can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, Georgia has evolved, as all states have, in the area of child support. When I first started practicing law, child support was you licked your thumb and put it in the air and the wind blew and you said, okay, you know, how are we going to calculate this child support? Very difficult to do.
Right.
And at that time, the mother's assets or income really weren't, if the mother was the custodial parent, which in those days, that was pretty much the norm.
The case, right.
The mother's income and assets rarely were thrown into the mix. It was what does daddy make and, you know, what can daddy afford kind of thing. And,
right.
And how hard can I negotiate if I'm representing mother and or father in that case. A number of years ago, they came out after some really hard work by the legislature and by the family law section. They came out with a child support guideline.
Okay.
That was to assist judges with literally a mathematical calculation. The first guideline basically had percentage numbers of gross income. And for example, and I'm going from memory because it's changed twice since then, mm-hmm. but I remember they would take the gross monthly income of the father, and if you had one child, it was 17% to 23% was the guideline to be applied. So if the father made $5,000 a month, you would basically cut the middle of the guideline somewhere in negotiations, about 20%. He would probably pay $1,000 a month for one child. And that was a system we used for a number of years. If there were two children, it was 23% to 28%. If there were three children, it was 28% to 33%. And you sort of, you know, tried to stay somewhere in the middle of the guidelines, and you conducted your negotiations that way. But that turned out to be not a particularly fair system because it didn't take into account the mother may have been employed. In some cases, the mother's income might have even exceeded the mm-hmm. father's.
Right.
So they went back to the drawing boards, and they developed a system whereby the father's monthly income, the mother's gross monthly income were put together, and they set up a table taking into account the family, total family income.
Gotcha.
And then you went to that table, you took the gross income, and this is how we do it now with some variations. And let's say, and I'll give you a hypothetical, let's say that the family income is $5,000, the father made $3,000, and the mother made $2,000.
Okay.
That would mean basically you would determine the percentage. If $3,000 is 60% mm-hmm. of the income, and if the table showed that for one child the child support would be $1,000, then the parent making 60% would be responsible for the $1,000.
Gotcha.
Excuse me, 60% of the $1,000.
Okay.
And then there would be up and down adjustments based on whether or not who was paying the medical insurance,
right.
who was paying the unpaid medical bills, who was paying for private school, who was paying for other things that related
right.
to the child. Maybe the child had special needs. So,
Carrie, Rich Casanova here. So,
Rich.
On the what about, you talked about alimony and the money, the dollars and cents, but what about property? You know, dividing up property, how does that come into play? Or do you all get involved in that?
Oh,
obviously, right, yeah.
Very much. We get involved in everything relating
yeah.
to the divorce.
Right, yeah.
property follows a kind of a, it's not a formula. I mean, people get very confused because frequently property ends up with long-term marriages being divided pretty equally between the parties.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, people believe that if you get divorced, it's a 50-50 division of property. That's not really true. Georgia is an equitable division state, and there's a very complicated analysis that we do where we determine what did each party contribute to the various assets, how long was the marriage, how did the asset come into being, was it a gift, was it an inheritance. We do what's called a Thomas tracing, which is a way to determine, even if it is a marital asset, how do you then divide it? And you have to look at contributions of spouses and all those other factors and length of marriage and so forth.
It's so detailed.
It is, but, you know,
That's what you do when you go into a marriage. You
know,
right. So it sounds like it's more current, up-to-date. Most families now both have, you know, two incomes. And, you know, I love that they're taking into account everything and not just the dad and...
And that's the fair way to do it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, speaking of going into marriages, what about prenups? I mean, that sounds like only celebrities get involved in that or whatever, right? Or rock stars or...
And a lot of non-celebrities do, by the way. Now get involved in that.
But I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, is that...
I think it's fair. I want to get back at some point to collaborative law.
Go ahead, go ahead. Let's talk about that.
But in regard to prenups, as long as that's the question that's on the table at this point, if you're a second or even subsequent marriage, third or fourth in many cases.
Multiple,
This is a fluid society, you might say. You certainly want to look at, generally they're going to be children from former marriage. Maybe those children are adults. Maybe your new husband or wife has, you know, assets that they want to protect. It's really a good idea to sit down and have a serious conversation about those. And the funny thing is, if you think about it in a business, from a business perspective, and anybody who's been married any length of time knows that at some point marriage does become a business. You may love the person you're in partnership with, but it still is a business in many ways. If you look at it from a business point of view, if you're going into partnership with somebody in a business, you're going to sit down and say, okay, we're on the honeymoon now. What happens if we break up? What happens if we no longer think this is a viable situation? What you're going to do is, in the very beginning, when you're incorporating somebody, you're going to sit down and you're going to work out a buy-sell agreement. You're going to have provisions for what happens when things go bad. That's all a prenuptial agreement is. It's to protect the assets for, let's say, children or even the person themselves if something doesn't work out. And it's kind of a buy-sell agreement, if you will.
Well, then you get a sense and a feel for both parties involved, if you will, of what their expectations are. And it's, it clears the air up front, right? So there's, you know, hopefully prevents some surprise. There are always going to be surprises.
Or it could make your job easier in the long run.
Yeah,
it might. It's that pay me now or pay me later kind of thing. The funny thing is, prenups are very complicated in the sense that if you don't do them right, if they're not properly drafted, they may not be enforceable on the tail end. So,
or you could end up causing more challenges on the back end. Yeah,
correct. And you know, we haven't really talked about alimony, but alimony is the money you pay to the spouse to based on the standard of living and the term of the marriage and whatever, which is separate from child support, obviously.
Right.
So that's a complicated question too, and it's not as frequently given as it used to be. It's become kind of stingily, if that's a word.
Yeah. It is now, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to get back to collaborative law.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Sure,
that Emily asked me about. Collaborative law is a process where both lawyers and both clients agree in a very, very open forum with total, complete disclosure and honesty to put all the assets and liabilities on the table, to sit down and in good faith to work out an agreement even before you start the process of negotiation and mediation or during this process. It requires complete candor on both parties and no holding back by the lawyers or the clients. My only complaint with collaborative law, and I wouldn't call it a complaint, but this is my opinion, is as part of that process, if the lawyers start and the clients start in a collaborative law process and it fails, the lawyers are not allowed to represent those clients in the divorce going forward.
Oh, wow.
So it pretty much, and that's part of the contract for collaborative law. So unless you think as a client that, or as a lawyer for that matter, unless you think that this is one that's going to be about a 95% probability of settling out of court, you probably have to be careful. And I'm always careful when I advise a client to say, you may pay me X to get through the collaborative process. If the thing collapses, you're going to have to start all over again with a new lawyer. So that lawyer is going to need a new retainer. He's going to need additional funds and whatever. So you might want to think about that. Whereas mediation, you can still work it out without the blood on the floor. So
Right. So that's kind of what you tend to do mostly, I'm sure.
I do. As a matter of fact, I'm strongly considering, after 31 years of fighting for all those things we're talking about, custody, visitation and all the other issues we just spoke about. I'm considering myself becoming a mediator because I do have a wealth of experience in that area, and I'm considering right now being the, quote, senior partner, which means I'm the old guy in the office, that maybe it'd be a little bit stressful, less stressful for me if I was sitting as the mediator. So it's a process I'm considering at this point.
Now, question for you, for somebody that's listening out there that has questions about divorce or maybe just, you know, thinking about it, has there ever been people that have come to you for counseling and kind of maybe changed their mind or, you know, at least thought about working it out?
Absolutely. There have been cases where people come to me, I call that the imaginary divorce case, where they come in, they're sort of having a fantasy about, I want to get a divorce, and maybe they have a friend that got divorced, and maybe the financial pressures are leaning on them a little bit, and they're, you know, they think maybe I might want a divorce. I give them the realities up front. I always, when a client comes in to see me, I always say, are you sure you want to get a divorce? And I'm very conservative in that regard. If I think that they're on the fence, I'll say, you know, maybe you don't retain me. Maybe what you need to do is go home, think about this for a few days. If you want to come back, you can come back. I don't get more notches on my belt for more divorces, you know, so, or on my gun, I might say. being a veteran, I guess I should say.
Not going for awards or whatever, for numbers,
Frequently, I won't say frequently, but occasionally, maybe 10 or 15% of the cases, people will come to me, we'll go through the process, we'll get all the way up to the courthouse steps, and they'll decide to reconcile and go back together. So it does happen, and in that regard, I feel like another reason why you don't want to spill too much blood on the floor, because it's hard to take those words back. Somebody asked me, how do I think a marriage becomes successful? And I say, a successful marriage is the one where when you're really angry, the one thing that you would say that you might never be able to take back, you just don't say it.
That was my next question.
Well, I already answered your next question.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, divorces, is there a, what's like a timeline typically, you know, from the shortest to the lengthiest, but, you know, is there like an average, so to speak, or ballpark?
Yeah, I would say so. And I mean, to some extent, it depends on the county and the lawyers and a lot of variables. But you can get a divorce as quickly as 31 days from the date the other side is served if the parties agree on everything.
Right,
That's not at all typical. generally, the minimum time you would have would be 46 to 60 days.
Okay.
Most divorces in most of the larger counties are a year.
Wow.
I would say 9 months to a year and a half. I have had divorces that stretched out for 4 years.
Wow. Some marriages don't even last that long.
Sometimes a divorce takes longer than the marriage.
Wow. But that's good to hear. If it's, you know, in the ballpark of 8, 9 months or a year, by that time, I think it's pretty, you know, there's some clarity that, you know, you're not making a quick decision. But 30 days, it's like, you know, I'm not even sure if I decide, you know,
what socks to wear.
There you go. Thank you. I was looking for something to wear. Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a minimum time. If both parties consent, generally you've already got an agreement when you file the papers.
It's probably been, you know, bubbling for the last 8 months or a year or so, whatever. Yeah.
If not,
what are the other,
longer. Yeah.
Let me ask you a couple more questions. Yeah. What are the other family law issues that you handle?
Well, of course, as part of the divorce action, frequently you've got custody questions. You've certainly got visitation issues. Custody issues can be the thorniest part of a divorce. And
Absolutely.
By custody, I might both involve the physical custody of the child and the legal custody. Legal custody relates to participation in school and religious upbringing and everything else that is involved with raising children. Physical custody is who the child lives with. Visitation, of course, is an issue. But the other issues in family law, frequently you have change of custody petitions that come about after the divorce.
Gotcha.
Or modifications. People want to go back 2 years later because they get fired, they lost their job, and now the child support makes no sense anymore. They can't afford it. Or perhaps there's an issue about the alimony being modified. Alimony generally is tied, not generally, is always tied to, periodic alimony is tied to conditions like death or remarriage or even shacking up sometimes is right. Is an issue that can change alimony. So, and there are adjustments sometimes that need to be made. You do an original parenting plan at the time of the divorce if there are children. Frequently, circumstances change. The children become older. They don't like the arrangement anymore of every other weekend or maybe one night a week for dinner, or maybe they want more with dad.
Sure.
So
sure.
There are all kinds of issues that come up post-divorce. We call that post-divorce litigation and aggravation. That's what we call it.
Gotcha. So you have a lot of clients, I'm sure, that have been with you for a long, long time.
I have.
That's good.
I'm happy to say that they're still calling me.
Right.
I hope that they do if you're out there. Keep calling me.
Now, tell me, somebody that's looking for a good family law attorney, what would they look for? What's some advice
criteria,
from
yeah.
you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, first of all, this is a very personal area. This is not like somebody owes you $100,000 and you sue him on a promissory note. This is something where you and the client, as an attorney, you and the client have to work together tremendously close mm-hmm. in order to understand the client and for the client to sort of understand your personality and how, just like any other profession, their lawyers litigate in different ways. They work their cases in different ways. So it's really important, number one, that your lawyer be experienced in the area. You don't want to have to pay to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
You want your lawyer to know the law and to understand how to deal with the financial issues. That's first of all. But almost equally as important is you have to know that the client and the lawyer get along well with each other. So there has to be a personality mesh. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to define that, really, other than the fact that there are times where I think the client can see almost immediately that that client and the lawyer may not be a good match, or they may see instantly that they are a good match.
Right.
I feel that there are even occasions where the lawyer should realize this is a client that we're not hitting it off early on, and the lawyer may even should decline representation in cases like that. I sort of use, and this is nothing scientific about this, but I sort of use an older lawyer when I first started practicing, and I started off at about age 40, which is not what most lawyers do. But I had half of a lifetime of experience at that point just in dealing with people. He said to me, and I said, do you have any advice for me when I opened my practice? And he said, when you're interviewing a client or they're interviewing you, if in your gut something doesn't feel right, no matter what the case is, no matter how much is involved, you don't take the case. And I sort of follow that rule, mm-hmm. the gut rule, which is if mm-hmm. I don't feel good, and I think the client is good for the client too.
Sure.
If the gut tells you this isn't the right lawyer, then I would say keep
diving.
Interviewing.
Yeah, yeah. You so know? Probably interview a couple attorneys to see who you...
It's probably a good idea, although I think that that's overrated sometimes, mm-hmm. interviewing a bunch of different lawyers. I think if you hit it off with somebody right away, go for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, listen, we're so excited to have you back today.
Thank you.
And we're glad that you got to share your practice. Now, tell me, how would our listeners get in touch with you if they wanted to know more?
Well, they can call me. And that phone number, the main number of the firm, it's Jacobs & King, and we're in the Perimeter Mall area, right near, near Peachtree, Dunwoody, and Mount Vernon in that area.
Okay.
And my phone number is 404-920-4490, or they can email for an appointment. They can either email me or my paralegal. I spell my name, Carrie, as Cary, at Jacobs, Jacobs, King, KING.com, or they can email Angie, ANGIE, at JacobsKing.com.
Great.
And we have a website, Jacobs King, and they can go there and check me out.
Awesome.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And
thank
we'll
you
hear
much.
From you in just a bit. I want to introduce John Jupin. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. So you're not necessarily an attorney, but you help attorneys.
Right. I'm a retired federal agent. I've opened up a PI for me. And mm-hmm. I right now I'm doing some indigent defense work and criminal defense work in the area.
Wonderful. And you're with Firewall Investigations.
Yep, which that's me.
And he grew up in New Jersey in a little town on the Jersey Shore called
Manasquan.
Manasquan, right. Thank you. It was about 20 miles north of where the TV series is based. He decided to get away and went to college at the University of Tennessee. Okay. After graduating, he went to the U.S. Navy as an officer and spent 4 years at sea. He left the Navy and completed his master's in public administration at Old Dominion. During that time, he worked as a consumer protection investigator for the city of Virginia Beach. Later, he became an FBI agent and worked a variety of cases in Pittsburgh and New York City. While in New York, he spent a lot of time working in and around the World Trade Center, then took some time to work for a private security company. Finally, he returned to federal law enforcement with the United States Department of Labor Office of Inspector General. He retired from federal law enforcement in 2010. Since then, he has been working as a private detective and certified fraud examiner on an air contributor to WSB, Atlanta ABC affiliate television, as a fraud expert and an instructor at Reinhardt University. He is passionate about fraud prevention and detection and looks forward to sharing his 30 years of fraud investigative experience today on the show. Well, we don't have time for 30 years, but we'll sum it up just a
about
little
bit. Five.
5 years would be good. Okay. Just the past five. No,
yeah.
And you brought a guest with you, Mike Mosky. Right.
Hello, how are you?
Good. And he's with On the Watch, and we'll actually read your, you've got some experience at the same area of experience, and
never was FBI though.
Yeah. But you work with John, and we're going to ask a few questions for you guys to answer. Tell me how to prevent, how to investigate fraud and prevent fraud. Sorry.
Well, one of the biggest problems is that most people have their heads in the sand. I mean, if you just go and say, they're not going to commit fraud because they're a member of my church, I've known them for 20 years, on and on and on, you're making a mistake. Most fraud is committed by people without criminal history. The fraud happens. There's this fairly famous saying, it happens within the fraud triangle. If there's opportunity, if there's pressure, and if there's rationalization, people will commit fraud. They've added another component to this fraud triangle. It's called capability. So if somebody has those four factors going in any business, any church, any traveling team, doesn't matter what, you're going to have fraud. Or fraud is present. You can have a problem with, you know, fraud. So it's like knowing that these factors exist and then try to mitigate those factors by detecting as soon as possible. You're never going to stop fraud. It's always going to happen.
Mm. Mm. That's scary.
You just want to catch it early. I mean, we were talking prior to coming out here about a law firm up in Forsyth County that had a longtime employee commit fraud for a number of years, and they never suspected anything.
Right, yeah. So if you know those four things,
right,
then you kind of know the formula and just can prevent before anything happens.
Right, or if you're preventing it, you want to also stop it in the first maybe 5 or 6 months rather than 5 or 6 years.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean.
So being aware.
You have to be aware. You have to understand that your employees have a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. Like Carrie was saying, what if they're going through a divorce? Mm-hmm. What if they're having financial hardships? What if you as the person who just went through a divorce, you're now working at a firm or working someplace, they don't respect you, they don't pay you, you need more money, you're not getting your alimony check.
Is that the pressure component?
That's the pressure component.
What was the fourth component again?
Capability. So
I got that one. I got opportunity, pressure.
Rationalization. Pressure. Okay.
Rationalization. That's
probably huge. Yeah. You are rationalizing that mm-hmm. I've been working at this place for a number of years.
Been underpaid. Everybody else gets more
than I do.
Yeah.
I don't
get all the perks.
I didn't get my Christmas
bonus. Right,
that's coming up right now, guys.
Right.
So be kind of aware. So
tis the fraud season.
Yeah, tis the fraud season. So
what a happy welcome to December. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this a bah humbug thing?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But people, it's reality.
People just love to.
It's reality, especially during this time of year when you've got all these shoppers and people online. And are there things to look for? Like you're talking about here, small businesses, probably in organizations. Are there things? Are there signs like your employees would say or do, or
if you
to watch out for?
If you let them do everything, like Karen and I were talking about, if you let them do everything, they write the check, they take the check, they send out the bill, they deposit the checks, you're just asking for trouble.
There's no checks and balances.
Nothing.
No pun intended, but yeah.
Nothing.
It's always the person you don't expect.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Wow. That makes me start thinking.
I know. I used to work with a person, or knew them from networking, didn't really work with them, but their business was forensic accounting.
Right.
And I had never thought of that as a business or as an entity, but they actually sought out, they found a person that had been incarcerated, had committed embezzlement,
right,
and once they released, brought her in the firm, and now, you know, game over, because she knows the jig is up with all the other, you know,
she's
on the inside with all the other employees, knows these red flags. And
well, and then one of the easiest things in terms of, you know, catching fraud, and people don't even think of this as a real fraud thing, is a hotline. It doesn't have to be a extensive hotline. It can be just a little box in your office someplace where people can drop
anonymous,
something
yeah.
off. Or one of the things I kept telling people is like, look, you know, hire somebody out on the outside and just give all your employees postcards. Mm-hmm. And if there's a fraud going on, all the person has to do is fill out the postcard and mail it off. And whether it be a PI or somebody, they get something. Or you can go to the $1,000 a month hotlines if you're a big business.
Right.
But you need to have a hotline. Hotlines get you more bang for your buck in terms of finding fraud than even internal audits.
But if people are calling in on the hotline?
Sure.
I mean, but then people are going to analyze that. Wouldn't they be concerned about their voice being recognized?
That's why you can send an email, maybe on the anonymous emails, or if you just mail something.
Right.
I mean, let's just go back to old school.
Right, exactly.
You have a post office box that here's the business card, or here's the postcard.
The template.
You know a fraud, you know something, turn it in.
So right next to your suggestion box, you'd have a fraud box.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. Or drop it. That's right.
I got a suggestion. This guy's committing fraud right next to me. Yeah. Bob, how do you spell your last name? Yeah.
And the suggestion is to fire Bob.
Yeah. But I was using hotlines, or we were using hotlines in federal law enforcement for years. And you would get those people.
Yeah.
Who would want to get somebody fired. But you have to investigate the hotline complaint.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
It might not be valid, but you go through it. At least people see you doing something rather than not doing anything. And that in itself is a preventive.
Yeah, because how much of the keeping them honest comes into play, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you're kind of...
Sort of like with kids. One of the stories that we tell about our son is that we would just show up occasionally where we thought he was. Mm-hmm. And he thought I was always there.
Yeah.
And one time, my son also went to UT, I was working a case up there, and I wanted to drive through this Taco Bell. Well, right in front of me was my son.
Right row.
Right in front of me driving through there. So I get right behind him, and I wait. And he thinks that I'm constantly bugging him or, you know, following him. But if people know that somebody's looking,
you know,
it's the theory about walking around, the management by walking around.
Sure.
If you're constantly in your office, if you're constantly just sending emails, you know, one of the things is you've got to get out and walk around.
Mm-hmm.
So,
my first battalion commander when I was in the Army, when I was a young second lieutenant, just green weenie, as we used to call
it,
said to me, a unit does well those things that the boss checks.
Right.
You can take that rule. You can apply it to your office, your marriage,
exactly.
Wherever
life,
you want to,
yeah.
You know, wherever you want to put it, it's right. You're really right.
You have to get out and get it.
But nothing like having a dad as a federal agent, FBI.
Whoa, right. Scary.
Yeah. Freaked him out.
I know we want to get to Michael here, but talk to us about choosing a private investigator. What are some criteria
Well, sort of like what Kerry was saying in, you know, terms of looking for a, you know, lawyer. We all don't do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm 60 now, and like Kerry wants to go into being the senior person. I don't want to sit out and do a surveillance. I did that 20 years ago.
Right.
I'm better at interviewing, helping out for a case, maybe court. I spent 20 plus years putting people in jail. So I have the expertise in terms of if you're defending somebody, this is what you ought to look at. So I think you need to figure out what that person's expertise is, and you also ought to talk to those people face-to-face, have a gut feeling about them. Mm. Just because somebody looks really good on paper doesn't mean that they're a good PI. But look for their certifications and also vet them through other attorneys. I mean, call your competitors up and say, hey, who is the PI that you know, you would want to hire.
Sure.
Because
sure.
It's not always just based on price, too. I mean, that's...
Now, tell me more towards the legal end. You help attorneys. Tell me a little how. And also, you know, what can a personal injury... private investigator. When I read PI, I'm going to say personal injury.
Yeah.
They're interchangeable, aren't they?
What could they do for a law practice?
I work a lot with single person firms or very small firms mm-hmm. who need help getting that expertise in there. I think the best thing is that the lawyer sees the PI as part of a team.
Okay.
And there's not, well, I'm the lawyer and you're the PI and I'll tell you what to do. One of the first things I did after starting my own little firm, I did some work for this one firm. The paralegal wanted to direct me on how to do an investigation. She had never done an investigation.
Right, that's what you're there for.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and people ask me for, well, give me advice. I don't give legal advice. Right. I will tell you how to do an investigation, what you might want to look for. What are the elements of the crime that you need to watch out for if you're doing an investigation? But I am not a lawyer. So I think find a PI who says, look, I do investigation. You're the lawyer. I work with you.
Gotcha. As a team.
Mm-hmm. It has to be a team.
And I can tell you that that's how we operate in my office. When we have an investigator, we give them the facts. We tell them what we suspect.
Sure.
We give them the identifying information, mm-hmm. Maybe the picture of the person and their Social Security number.
That helps a lot.
Yeah, we just try to target him and say this is the day of the week that he's likely to be where he says he's not.
Right.
So, and then I turn it over to them and let them do their work.
Sure. Let them be their professional.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me really quickly before I introduce Mike, how people that are listening can get in touch with you, and then we'll kind of come back.
They can call me at 678-267-9453 or send me an email at john.jupin, J-U-P-I-N, @gmail.com.
Great.
That'd be fine.
Yeah. So that was a good summary of 30 years.
Yeah. I hope
that's
so.
That's a start, whatever. Yeah. We'll do the next 15 when you come back, whatever.
Okay.
So we have Michael Mosky. Good morning, and thank you for being so patient with us.
Thank you.
He is a proven leader in the security field who has maintained a focus on training, loss prevention initiatives, and outstanding customer service, enhancing profitability by developing dynamic teams and enhancing safety awareness. Very knowledgeable in investigations with a proven track record of implementing the necessary controls to ensure compliance. And he's dedicated to maintaining a reputation built on quality service and uncompromising ethics. You work in the areas of investigations, training, regulatory compliance, hospitality management, security management. So tell me a little bit more about how you got into what you do.
Well, my background is basically hospitality. I've been in the industry about 26 years. I just recently opened my own loss loss prevention private investigation company. I'm licensed here in Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida. So we cover the whole Southeast. But, you know, it's been a passion.
Yeah.
I like my goal is to stop things before they happen. Yeah, I think anybody like can respond onset. To things, mm-hmm. but it takes sure. a real winner to try to figure out what the problem is before it happens and then stop it and go from there.
Right. Right. Now tell me, it's on the watch.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm looking at the website now. I'm not updating my Facebook status, by the way. I'm looking at your website. Yeah, I already did that earlier during Carrie's talk.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
So tell me one of your favorite cases, if you can do it without naming names or.
Yeah, there's so many of them. Like I was saying before, I think it's, you know, and Carrie was mentioning about having pictures and giving us ideas. You know, being a private investigator, it helps when we have the information.
Sure.
The more information we have, the easier our job is, because we're trying not to be detected. We're spies.
Sure.
We don't want people to see who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
what we do. You know, and if we have the more information, it helps us to do our job better so we can give them more information and be able to be more productive.
Right.
But I've had so many experiences, you know, in the loss prevention field and also in private investigation where people just seem to want to rip people off. And
right.
we're in that season like we talked about before.
Yes.
This is a prime example of it with credit card fraud and with all kinds of other things going on. And if you have somebody that's on your side, like, you know, like John or I, we're here to help, and that's what that our goal is. We're here to solve the problem, and we're here to stop it before it happens.
So how do you know to even get started in something like that?
You're a private investigator?
No. I'm sorry. Like, to hire somebody like you, how would you know to even?
Right. I think if you have a suspicion, you know, I read mm-hmm. a book a long time ago, and it talks about how our gut instinct is 90% accurate.
Okay.
If we see a gang of kids on the side of the road and they're walking down the road and we have that feeling of uneasiness, mm-hmm. there's a reason why we have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to go with that feeling. Same thing with investigation. Majority of people that call me already know what the problem is. They already know. They just need to have the proof. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get in the proof. And mm-hmm. and so I think if you have that instinct, yeah. go with that instinct and call someone.
And you probably work with a lot of attorneys as well.
I do.
And typical attorneys would be probably family law, like
right.
Carrie, criminal law. Tell me some others.
Well, other than I do a lot of workers' comp cases as well as I do surveillance. You know, John handles the other part of it. But I'm the one that goes out and actually sits in my car all day long and get fat. And,
I'm too old for that now.
I'm too old. Yeah, so I occasionally have to get out of my car, walk around. I take my bike with me or whatever I have to do. But yeah, I'm the one that get calls to go out there and actually investigate the situation.
So we don't want to take your picture today, right? Because we don't want to see.
That's fine.
I wore my suit too late.
Well, great. Well, let's talk a little bit more about. I know in my firm, Peachtree Offices, I deal with a lot of mail fraud, obviously, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of people that get addresses. So there's signs that I have to look out for. A lot of red flags that go up right away. Obviously, if you don't have your ID, that would be the number one thing. But people that go through, do you have any stats for like how bad it is right now, and especially this time of year? Either of you can answer that question, I guess.
The stats, one of the biggest problems I see with businesses is that they don't bother to check out the vendors.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
You know, you even see it with the federal government with Medicare and Medicaid. Mm. For years, no one bothered to check the address.
Wow.
Or to check whether it's whether it's just a post office box. That's all I have is a post office box.
Right.
I work out of my car.
We definitely
basically.
Need to talk later.
She said to the virtual office. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're legit. I promise. Yes.
But I mean, follow up on somebody that claims to be a vendor. I mean,
yeah, just don't be so blind about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can see stories in the news all the time about the trusted employee who set up the business and then runs contracts to the business.
Mm-hmm.
Happened at the Woodruff with their maintenance person. They have issues right now down at Georgia Tech.
Mm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a case down there. There's cases all over the place where your trusted employee sets up a side company and you don't bother to check out your vendors.
Right.
You know, vendors should be looked at least once a year. Just hire someone to just go through the list.
Right.
It's very simple. It doesn't take a whole lot, but
it's not that expensive.
Right? I think it's also important for companies to do training.
Yes.
That's the key.
Oh, that's training. A great idea.
Yeah, especially if you're like a retail or any kind of business. Well, you need to train your people how to detect counterfeit currency, how to detect counterfeit credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think about that. I know I worked at a hotel local downtown Atlanta here, and we had a $100 note that was passed, and they striped the little strip, you know, little pin, and they thought it was a real bill. And it was a real bill, but it was a real $5 bill. But it was being passed as a $100 bill.
Oh,
wow.
So these people made off with $95 and for nothing.
Wow.
Can you show us that technique after we off?
Well, yeah. Hopefully, nobody in Secret Services wants.
Yeah, speaking of hotel, I have a couple questions about looking at your website here and the range of services from obviously we're talking about the seasonal, your shopping program audit, but also looking at your background in security specialist Walt Disney and the Westin in Miami, also, right, with South Beach, but in Denver, 1,225 room hotel.
Right.
Wow. That's a so that kind of
spearheaded. So you're not just a Mickey Mouse detective.
No. I still have
well,
my ears.
He was. He left. Yeah. He moved way past. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, from looks like from 88 to current or whatever. Yeah. So a lot of background in.
It's been a fantastic ride. I've enjoyed every bit of it. It's interesting for me to solve the puzzle.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I do what I do, because I like to put things together. And if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, looks like a duck, it's not a dog.
It's not a penguin, yeah.
Yeah, it's a duck. Right. So, you know, it's just looking at things and trying to put pieces together, and that's what we do.
That's great.
Can you talk to us about the shopping program audit that you offer?
One of the things we in loss prevention and private investigation, it's very important for businesses today to audit their companies. Have a shopper. You know, a lot of these companies use them for customer service, and that's one thing we offer as well, because, you know, I come from Disney.
Right,
so
yeah.
I know how customer service should right, be. Yeah.
The ultimate.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you learn these things, and it's like, you know, business is a passion. I mean, either you want people to come back to you or you don't want people to come back. So many companies now you can compare, even locally, mm-hmm. where you see people would rather pay more money to go into a business that treats them good.
Sure.
That says welcome to them or takes their plate or whatever they do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I hear that from more and more people, but yet these companies, and so that's what we focus on. We go in and we shop these companies, not only from a loss prevention aspect of it, but also from a customer service aspect.
I had an idea. I don't know if this is original or not or whatever. Occasionally I have one. But but speaking of the shopping, so you're talking about like a secret shopping service where people come in, and we typically think about that from customer service, but they could have their security eyes on or whatever, right?
Right, exactly.
But what about like a if you contracted like a temp person to come in and under the guise that, I don't know if this is legal or not, but under the guise that they are filling in, especially seasonal help, but really they're there, you know, doing admin work or whatever the job capacity, but they're actually undercover, you know. And so, because a lot of times employees will chat, they will not tell their management or the ship, they'll tell a fellow employee.
Sure.
So how do you, it's almost like undercover boss, that you know, reality show, right?
Right.
But the undercover employee. And so that employee there is only there for a couple of weeks, and they know
is
that it's
legal?
Just a temp. I don't see anything wrong about it, right? I mean, because they're doing real work. I mean, they can trade emails. But a lot of times then, when the door closes, the boss has left. So how are things here, whatever? Oh, I'm telling you, man, I'm making some deals off the side here. You know, you want to get in on this, right?
Right.
What are your thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, let's...
Do we have a new venture here, right?
Well, let's...
I think radio, you should stick with me.
Okay. That actually...
Wow, that didn't last very long. Yeah.
That actually goes on right now with criminal enterprises. They get themselves hired as temps, and they
behind
go into
the
places where there's a lot of personal information. You're talking doctor's offices, dentist's office.
Front desk of hotels.
Yep.
Front desk, car.
And it gives them the opportunity.
Dealerships.
Is the first
right.
part of the triangle.
Any place where there's personal
wow.
data. socials, date of birth, addresses, the whole bit.
Wow.
It is a gold mine for someone doing identity fraud.
So when you hire a temp, you've really got to vet and you've got to do a background check.
Right.
Independent probably of saying, well, we already did the work for your on behalf of you.
Well, or if you have a reputable firm that hires that, does that. Or if you are concerned, you could get an insurance policy on any temp that's going to be handling money. It's called fraud insurance. But you're insuring that bookkeeper, that person that handles your funds in case. Because it's hard to get money back from somebody that doesn't have any money.
I'm kind of a devil's advocate, though. I mean, that seemed like if they're only there for 3 weeks, 3 years later, 6 months later, you find out there's missing money. I'm in no position to kind of really challenge.
No.
But I'm thinking just from a observer standpoint, how can you 6 months later say, well, we're going to pin it to this person as opposed to Bob or Tom? Whatever,
you can't. Right? But what if that person that you, hire as a temp all of a sudden starts stealing, maybe not so much money, but the data, that is then used.
And I still think if you're a highly sensitive business with those issues and the concerns, it would behoove you to do a double check, if you will, right? And I'm not talking about the State Farm double check deal, whatever.
But going back to your, concept about putting someone in, happens all the time.
Yeah.
If you, hire someone to actually go in there and, work as a temp, work in the mail room, wherever.
A lot of these companies hire these temporary companies. And they figure, well, they do the background checks on these employees, and so I don't need to do them. That's not the trick case. You're still liable for the people that work on your property.
Yeah, I still say that if you have a pretty sensitive business, that you do a second one.
Sure.
Because it could slip through the cracks. I mean, you might have a very reputable firm, but human errors makes a mistake, and it's your business. I say you do another one. But
sure.
So tell me, Mike, how can people listening get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me directly. My number is 770-900-4274, or they can reach out to me on my website at www.onthewatch.org, and they can email me at mmoske, it's M-M-O-S-K-E, at onthewatch.org.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, well, this is a good show. And it was, I think, seasonal appropriate, even though it was a little depressing, but that's okay.
insightful and just being insightful, keen
being
and
aware.
Yeah. I just have to jump in real quick with John. I didn't realize you spent so much time in Virginia Beach. I went to high school up in Virginia Beach.
Oh, okay.
I spent a lot of time up there. And but any issues I may or may not have been involved in, the statute of limitations have run out now. I'm clear.
Where did you live again?
At Virginia Beach stays at Virginia
Beach. We are almost out of time, luckily for me,
What was your high school again?
Exactly, yeah. I had a P.O. box or whatever, we don't need to continue. We're out of time. Thanks, John. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you to everybody here. Thank you for everybody listening, all the fans out there, the avid listeners that I've heard before. Yeah. I'm Emily Rowell with Peachtree Offices, and you can go to our website to listen to all the shows and check out all of our guest bios at www.atlantalegalexperts.com. And we look forward to talking with you next week.
Absolutely. See you next time on Atlanta Legal Experts Radio.